The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gillen.
It is so great to have you here on Afternoons with Mike. On the line with me today is Jeff King. Jeff is the president of the International Christian Concern, that's ICC. And this is an organization that works with believers who are undergoing the kind of persecution that we hear about from time to time. It's in the news. But in Jeff's world, with what he's dealing with it not only every day, but all across the world. In different areas, it's particularly dangerous. A lot of hot spots. And Jeff is working with it faithfully. Welcome to the program, sir.
Oh, great to be with you.
Well, it's great to talk with you. I know that, again, your organization focuses on helping believers. A lot of the people you work with are incarcerated to some degree, or facing that, or maybe under constant threat. How is it, Jeff? Tell us a little bit about your background. What is it that got you going in this direction?
Well, I'll go way back, and I'll try to speed through it. But I grew up in an atheist or agnostic family. And at 12 years old, I discovered the Bible. I found a Bible on our shelf from one of my dad's Bible lit course in college. So, and he had saved it. It was up on the shelf. I start reading it at 12 years old. I just know there's a God. I want to find him. And there's a long period of, you know, the Lord's chasing me and is waiting until I get really right. But at 23, 24, I get radically saved.
Wow.
And kind of rough period between that. But man, when I was ready, he pulled the trigger and I got radically saved. And I was in a church that was, you know, loved evangelism, really activist church, loved it, loved ministry. But I said, look, I can't be poor and I'm going to go into business. I went into corporate banking and then into mortgage banking. And after I enjoyed some success, and in 1 month, I made twice what other people were making in a year at an early age. I was like, I don't care. It's never going to satisfy me. It was a good lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And right after that, so I get a calling into ministry, and it was very clear. I spent 11 years with Campus Crusade for Christ, now CRU.
Yes.
And I was running around the world, and I was either doing the Jesus film or doing working kind of like evangelism in closed countries, so very secure, more dangerous countries. And, you know, but at the end of that time, you know, you have to raise your own financial support with Crusade. And at the end of that time, the last 2 years, it all started to fall apart and I couldn't fix it. And it was distressing in the end there because the Lord wasn't giving me any direction. But I finally realized that he's pulling me out of here. And, but without the, you know, he doesn't tell you all the steps. He just is like, trust me, and which is hard. So I'm going through that, and then I'm out in California for meetings with the Jesus film, and I have, during the night, I have this dream. And in the dream, I'm talking to an imaginary businessman, and I'm talking to him on the phone, I decide to go by his business. And I go by his business, and all his workers are standing outside, and I say, hey, where's Bill? I just call him Bill. And they said, Bill's gone. I said, well, where is he? Again, this is all the dream. Well, where is he? I was just talking to him. No, he's gone, gone. He's dead. I said, he's not dead. I was just talking to him. And this goes back and forth in argument. He's dead. No, he's not. Yes, he is. And then finally they say, I'm telling you, he's dead. He dropped dead. We're really scared. Do you want to run the business? And I wake up. That's the dream. No more weird than any other dream. And so then I'm out in California and I check my phone, and an old friend and a supporter had called me. So I call her back right after the dream. And she says, my husband and I are connected with this organization and their founder just dropped dead. And all I can think is you're the guy that's supposed to run the thing.
Oh my word.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what I said, you know, cause I'm like anybody else. We're praying for direction all the time. And how often do we get it? Right.
That's just, right.
Yeah.
And
so
sometimes,
one of the very few times you get crystal clear communication and direction.
You know, and it can happen in a dream. I mean, that's without a doubt biblical. We read about that. And at times, you know, you're right. I have been of late having some of the weirdest dreams that you can imagine. Every now and then, one of them in my lifetime have those dreams have really meant something. And, you know, that just like you did with you, and that couldn't have been more chilling when you heard those words. And you think, wait a minute, this must not just have been pizza.
Yeah, and so here's the crazy thing too, Mike. It's like I'm a student of the Bible, and as you said, it's biblical. So if you study the Bible, you see it's very clear that the Lord communicates in dreams. So I prayed for that, and I prayed for that for years. No answer. And then when he decides to answer, that's how he does it. I mean, it's a big one, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and then, though, you know, you can't call up the board of this organization you know nothing about. You can't call them up and say, hey, by the way, I just had the dream. You're supposed to hire me. That doesn't work so well.
No.
And so I kind of had to apply and just wait around. It felt very surreal, and it felt like theater, you know.
Yeah.
And then finally, when they hired me, I'm like, I've been dying to tell you something. And they were greatly encouraged. So.
Well, that lets them know that they did the right thing. They hired the right person.
Yeah, they were very encouraged.
Yeah,
and these were men of prayer, and lots of people were praying. So it was a very cool thing. So I kind of land at ICC, and, you know, I've been in ministry for 11 years, but I don't know that much about persecution. I know a lot about international ministry, and I know a little bit about persecution. I start opening the files. You know, going through country by country and figuring out where our assets are and who, what we're doing and what's the history. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's a horror show.
Mm.
And I'm asking the Lord, I say, why, Lord, why am I here? Because at heart, I'm an evangelist. I'm a revival guy. Those are the two big notes in my heart all the time. And it wasn't entirely clear, but he kept whispering to me over and over. It was very insistent, and he kept saying that I want you to learn the lessons of the persecuted and the martyrs. I want you to listen and watch and learn, and then I want you to share them. They're not just for you. I want you to share them with the church. And if I had to encapsulate all that, it was listen, learn, and shout. He didn't say it that way, but that's what
right.
he's saying. And so soon after, I go to China. And I'm in China, and I had set up the meeting. I said, give me a meeting with pastors that had been in prison for a long time. And so I sat down one afternoon with five or six pastors, and they had all been in prison camps. So, and the shortest sentence was 10 years, the longest was 24. And these guys were giants. And I say guys, it was men and women, but these guys were giants of the faith. But not famous at all. No one would ever know these people, even within China. Simple rural pastors, but had gone through the fire, and it was just a treasure to be with them. And I'm going to give you three things they told me. This is after, you know, speaking for a couple hours. But I said, "Tell me about persecution." And they said, "Persecution is a gift." I'm from DC. I'm from the big city, and I'm like, "Oh, really?" I'm like, "Is this marketing? What's going on here?" They're like, no, it's a gift. And they said, it's not one you'd ever want. It's not one you'd ever give to anybody, but it's a gift because it breaks us of our strength and it makes us dependent.
Yeah.
And when we're dependent, he can flow through us.
Yeah.
And I say, well, what would the Chinese church be without persecution? And they said that the church without persecution would be a mile wide and an inch deep. And you'd have famous speakers going around from church to church who are good communicators, but they don't really understand the anointing. They don't have the anointing. They don't have the power of God. They can't speak with the power of God. And I was like, wow. And I'm just trying to figure out again, like, what are they doing? Are they schooling me? I said, do you know anything about the U.S. church? And they say, no. And again, these guys had spent two decades in prison. They're just simple rural pastors. They were just speaking spiritual truth. And the last question, Mike, I asked him, I say, what's your biggest worry? And I had no idea what to expect. You know, it's just a discovery question, just trying to figure out where the gold is. What's your biggest worry? And they said, our biggest worry is that the guys coming up after us, they haven't been hunted and imprisoned and tortured and murdered like we were. They had my attention. And that rattled around my brain for like 10 years. You know, persecution is a gift. And just the core of what they were saying, I'm seeing it all in the ministry. And always, why am I here, Lord? What is it? And then that charge he had given me, listen, learn, and shout. And then after about 10 years, I started to try to write my second book and tried to articulate it. And that really helped. So to go from rattling around in your brain to putting it down on paper and trying to make it articulate. And then I began to see, and persecution, what I saw is nothing but deep suffering. So I always thought it's such a niche ministry, persecution. And so many people don't want to be involved with it because there's so much pain and bloodshed. It's very hard.
Right.
And I'm like, so, you know, and I feel like I'm called to evangelism and to revival. And then I saw that persecution is deep suffering. And we are all very familiar with deep suffering. We have all been in prison. And our prisons are different. So our prisons have the names of divorce and career and bankruptcy, getting fired, relationships, you know, marriage, et cetera, loneliness, meaninglessness, but they are prisons nonetheless. And so we all find ourselves in this spot as human beings where we have been sentenced to time in prison, but we don't have the strength to endure our sentence. And we cry out, and our response always is that we must escape, and we do everything we can to escape. And then, though, so then it all began to make sense, though, why I was called into this thing, because what I saw, what did those pastors say? That the suffering breaks us of our independence and our self-strength, and then we become dependent. And when we become dependent and we connect with him, not in our normal way where it's like, Lord, you know, just the surface prayers and bless this and give me this or give me some strength, work through me, blah, blah, blah. Whole different thing when we are dying and we have to live and we there's no escape. That's a different prayer, right?
That is
a different spot in life.
Yeah.
And so when that happens, that's when the magic in our life happens. That's when transformation happens. And so what I saw was that the suffering, the intense suffering we go through, it's not a destination. That's what we feel like. It's a punishment. It's a destination. And it's not. It's a door to transformation. But he can't get you to where you're supposed to be, to where you're going to be in the future. He can't get you there without the pain. He doesn't cause it, but he'll sure use it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of it. That's what I saw. And so really, that's a lot of the message of what I'm talking about all the time. What is the Lord trying to do through your suffering? And ultimately, that's how I got involved. And that's why I wrote the book even.
You know, you're talking about this, and my mind over here, as I'm listening to you tell this story, it goes all the way back to the New Testament, because they were no different than we in the sense, even though that was first century Christianity right there, that they were freshly with the Lord, and yet it didn't take long for comfort to set in. But what was it that spurred on the growth? What was it that brought evangelism and expansion? It was nothing less than persecution. And it looks horrible in the beginning, but like you said, now I've never thought of persecution as a gift. But the way you're saying it, and that's not to be tried. It's not to be, it's certainly not to point a lightness at what these people are going through who are in prison in China and other countries like that. But it is to say that from the very beginning of our walk with the Lord, that has been part of the recipe for growth and expansion. And so while we don't like it, and it's like you said, not a gift you'd want to give someone, here's a dose of persecution. Isn't it wonderful? That doesn't happen, but God uses it in his will and in his plan. And that's exactly what happened to you. And that is amazing.
Yeah. And I'll tell you something I saw, Mike, watching and talking to prisoners and talking to those who had gone through, you know, torture. And we all just have to put ourselves in the same place of in our own lives, what we've gone through, that it's the equivalent, those periods that we dread that just come in this life, deep, deep suffering. So here's what I saw with the persecuted. And this is one of the lessons I try to drive home in the book. And in the book is a devotional. It's a 30-day devotional. So I never say, here's the top 10 lessons you got to learn. I kind of bury them and talk about them and back into them. But here's one of them, that our natural inclination with suffering is, of course, to run and to escape. And we cry out, oh, Lord, you know, here he is saying you're finally in the place where you need to be for transformational growth. But all we're trying to do is to escape and to run. And so what I saw was that over and over, you'd see a person who is literally being tortured in prison. And they get to this point and they say, Father, wait a minute. You know, if you're in control of all things, then I'm going to accept this is an assignment from you. And excuse me. This is an assignment from you. And that's the key thing. Is this an assignment from the Lord? And too often it is. Yeah. So if it's an assignment, then we have to stop working against him. And we have to join with him.
Yeah.
And the way I say it is we have to reach out to our cell door in that prison. And we have to close it shut ourselves.
Yeah.
And then we say to the Father, I'm going to stay here until you're done with me, until you say it's time to go. And I want to learn and I want to be transformed. So Father, come and do whatever you want. And it's that complete and total submission that my life is no longer my own. And we all say that, but that's where the rubber meets the road. It's no longer my own. It's whatever you want, even though I am dying.
Yeah. And literally at times. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And, you know, those changes that happen in the middle of those kinds of experiences of persecution are not only affecting the person who's going through it, but as what you've seen, it affects everyone in their life and their friends and their family and maybe even members of extension of churches, et cetera. It really is a wide swath, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing, too, is it's not a formula, but when we get to that point, that's usually when the release comes.
Yeah.
That's when you graduate. And so then the lesson ends usually. And it's the craziest thing to watch and to hear as people tell you their story. You just listen. You're like, wow, I see it. Oh, my gosh. So, again, not a formula. So it's not like, let me say this so I can get my sentence over, you know, and escape. It's when that heart change happens, because that's the whole point, really, and to become completely dependent and to be for him to be empowered through you and to say, my life is not my own. It's his.
Ooh, that's a good point right there to jump to a break that we've got to take. My guest today is Jeff King. He is president of International Christian Concern. That stands for, or that's the acronym of ICC that they're known by. Their website is persecution.org. And we'll be back with Jeff in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're on The Shepherd.
Would you like to increase your business's exposure in the Christian community and build your business with greater kingdom purpose? If so, then the Central Florida Christian Chamber of Commerce is the solution for you. Hi, this is Co-President Latondra Heaven. The Christian Chamber is more than just another business organization. It's a regional community of business professionals passionate about advancing the kingdom of God through the marketplace in Central Florida. As a member, get access to exclusive values-based networking events, Christ-centered professional development, marketing opportunities, and consistent prayer support for you and your business. Plus, gain access to the National U.S. Christian Chamber Coalition. Become a member today. Visit our website, cfchristianchamber.com, or call us at 407-431-0732. That's 407-431-0732.
On the phone now with Jeff King. He is president of International Christian Concern, that's ICC. Jeff sees a lot. He has talked to so many people. He has been personally affected by these stories in many ways. And I love, if you've just tuned in, Jeff mentioned something that was kind of like a showstopper, drop the mic moment there when he said that persecution, you begin to see it, as one person told him, it's a gift. And it is something that God uses Again, I love what Jeff, you said. He doesn't cause it. He doesn't make it that happen. But he uses these things in our life. And he told us, quite frankly, in the world, that we're going to suffer for his sake. And persecution is deep suffering, as you said. And we know that the church expanded. It grew by multitudes because of the fact that Christians were persecuted. And in the early days, and that goes on to today. So this is something that is going on. It's going on all the time. You know, I found this, and I bet you will agree with this. I found that when I've gone to countries that I would have thought were suffering because of the government oppression and suppression that's happening upon them, and I get and I talk to the believers there who are undergoing this, I thought I would find people so broken and so, down and depressed. And I got there and I found out they're some of the happiest, most joyful people. And they're living in the midst of this. And I'm sure you've seen the same thing.
Yeah. Well, and if you look around the world and look at antidepressant sales, where are the biggest sales? They're in the Western wealthiest countries. So
yeah,
in some ways, it shouldn't be a surprise to us. And a corollary story to what you're saying, and Mike, I bet you experience the same thing. So in those places, I always think of two national churches when I think about what you're talking about, and it's Cuba and China. And both of these places, I had the experience, not just one time, I'd had this experience over and over, where I go into a church, and in Cuba, when you say church, I'm talking, most of the time I'm talking about a little rickety thing. It's a little shed attached to the pastor's house, which is a shed. And, you know, so it's a bigger shed, but it's got pews made of sticks and this dirt floor. So, it's as unimpressive as it can be visually. But I would get there and people have been there and they've been praying for hours and sometimes even for days, you know, that because the Lord is just so central to their life, the economy is destroyed. They are so marginalized as Christians. But they are hanging on to him with everything they got, that brokenness, and then he flows, right? And so I would walk into a church, and I always felt like there was some invisible door, and you walk in there, an invisible curtain, and you're into the presence of the Lord. You can feel his presence.
Yes.
You want to bow down. And, and in both of those countries, it's not only there, but both of those countries, I would always experience that. And I find it so amusing that the dictators never learn. It's like if they want to defeat the church, they need to completely free it and then make the Bible mandatory reading everywhere. That's what they should do.
That's a sad reality, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yet, at the same time, that's kind of what's happened in America, because we've gotten so comfortable. We're kind of just sitting there thinking that everything's great. We're not all that different from the guy that said, hey, eat, drink, and be merry. You know, let's build our big barns and let's put the silos up. And, you know, that's the danger of prosperity. Boy, is it scary. It's more dangerous than persecution.
And I may step on a few toes here, but I'm thinking about this picture I saw, and this is a nuanced comment. So, in fact, I was down in Orlando a couple months ago, and I spent 11 years in Orlando,
running
around the world, with crew. But I'm in a Panera, and talking to a friend who's going through health tragedy, and next to us, there's a group of retired guys, and they're all there for Bible study. Nothing wrong with that. Oh my gosh, that's a good thing, because that's, first of all, one of the marks of a mature believer, right?
Yeah.
But I couldn't help but think, having been a Christian in America for a long time and been in lots of different churches, so that's kind of a lot of times the mark of a higher functioning church. So you've got believers there that are studying the word. But you think about, what did the Lord call us to? So, because part of what you're seeing, if you wanted to be negative, say, well, that might be the holy huddle where we're just hovering around each other and let's sit and study the scriptures together. But he called us to be revolutionaries. He gave us a charge to go out and to win and to disciple the world.
Mm-hmm.
But what are we doing? And it's like, how many churches do you see that where that's a practical reality. You know, they go out and they evangelize, and then they take new believers and they teach them how to do the same, and they disciple them. That is a very rare thing. And that's what I experienced in the faith. I came to Christ in one of those Jesus Revolution movements, really. These were all guys that had gotten saved in that phenomenal revival that we saw in the movie, the Jesus Revolution, you know? And it's just like, I just think we're off. And see, that's what's missing in the persecuted church that you were pointing out, that they are marginalized. Everything's been taken away. So they're not fat and happy. There's nothing left. And they're like, what is our charge? And you can kill me. You can do whatever you want, but I am going to go. All around me are the dead and the dying.
Yeah.
And I have been appointed to rescue. I have been given the message of life. And what am I doing with it? Am I just sitting around with my buddies and talking about how great this message is and how great it is that we have the life preserver while everyone else is drowning around us? And I'm like, oh my gosh, we just need revival in this country. And part of that is to say, to go back and say, what did Jesus tell us to do? Because you've got to see there's that big difference between a church that's so dependent and so focused on him versus what you just described, the way you said it, kind of fat and happy, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And, you know, when I've ironically, I went to Cuba, and that's exactly the picture that I had in my mind when I was sharing that with you. And the people that are there, you know, one of the things that we were doing, we were holding for pastors, we were holding a worship conference right in the middle of the island. And it was where the revolution kind of kicked off back, you know, in the early times. And so we were at this camp that's there, and we were meeting all of these people, not only from Cuba, but there were a lot of people's groups that had come in. A lot of pastors and worship teams had come together from other, you know, even Venezuela. We had people from there, some different countries surrounding the islands. And so we learned, it seemed like we were all there, that everyone was there in unity. And there was one couple that was there that particularly befriended my daughter, who went along with us on that trip. And they were nice, and they were talking with her, and they were like very curious, and they took part in everything that went on. We later found out that they were informants. And the government had completely infiltrated that entire thing, and later persecuted some of the pastors who had brought in people from other countries. They persecuted them. They gave them a hard time, stripped them of stuff. And that's what happens when you're there. And you know, and yet knowing all of that's going on, here's the thing that I love about what you're doing, is that you get to hear the stories of their joy in spite of that kind of persecution. Because when you have the Lord, that's the one thing that can't be taken away from you. The darkest prison will not remove the joy of the Lord from your heart.
Yeah, and the other words associated with that victory, you know, and what I say, another one of these lessons is that what he's doing all the time through suffering, through life, is he's trying to effect upon our hearts a treasure transfer.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you're younger, you know, I don't know about you, but I thought, oh my gosh, my dream was to get rich and have a Mercedes. I thought that would be the coolest thing.
Corvette for me, man. That's where
there
I was.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah.
And, but I just remember, you know, when I was in mortgage banking and, you know, the top guy in my branch, sales guy, he went out and bought a couple $100,000 Porsche. That's 30 years ago. If you're like, I was like, oh my gosh. And that's so cool. And you look back and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm stupid. Not him, me wanting those things. You know? And you're like, because you learn over time that money's just, it's hopeless as an answer for just about anything. It helps with a few things, but for all the really important stuff. But there's a treasure transfer he's doing all the time, and he's trying to get you to trade things in. And we have all these idols, and we don't even realize they're idols.
Yeah, that's right.
And we hold on to them, and then he's always trying to make a trade. And the trade usually comes in those periods of crisis and where we let go and we say, you know what? Gosh, there's only one answer, and it's him, and I just need more of him.
Wow, that is so good, Jeff. If you've just tuned in, Jeff King is who I'm talking with, International Christian Concern, ICC. Jeff is, he's a very experienced minister, was with Crew for a long time. I had no idea you were actually based in Orlando for a while. So the next time you come back, you've got to come back up to the studio now.
Oh, I'll do it. Okay.
This would be really, really wonderful. Now, one thing I want to get to before we lose all of our time, and that is the book that you've written. It's a devotional. Yeah. It's called The Whisper, Lessons of Renewal Whispered from the Prisons of the Persecuted Church. So, man, I love earlier when you were talking about how the Lord spoke to you in a whisper. So that's as real. I found in my own life that when the Lord whispers something to me inwardly, he may have shouted it from the rooftop with a megaphone because it was that real and that clear. And that's what you're gathering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And unfortunately, the book is only available in one bookstore. It's someplace called Amazon. I don't know, but maybe people can find it.
So. Yeah. Like every other book that is available today. Right.
And, absolutely.
It's nuts. Okay. So that's going to be something friends must read, The Whisper. And, you know, you've listened to all these stories and, you know, I think a lot of times people in America, they would say, that's got to be a depressing thing, right? To work with the persecuted church nonstop, 40 hours a week or 60 hours a week or however much time you're putting into it. But it sounds to me like what you're doing is it's drawing you closer into the very circle of the talk of the Spirit of God, because that's when things are stripped away and there's nothing else. I think of Matt Redman's old song, the Heart of Worship, you know, when the music fades and all is stripped away and there's only one thing left, and that is the Lord. Now that's when the party begins.
Yeah. And we'll have to have more conversations, because you know, both things you said were true. It can be really depressing. You know, I've done this for a long time, and you see a lot of horror. You see the worst of the worst of humanity. And so there's a cost to that. And there's no pity party here. There's no, you know, I'm not looking for pats on the back. But what happened in the end was I saw, you know the church wins in the end. If you're a student in the scriptures, everybody knows that he wins in the end. How could it be? And that's one of my favorite subjects, because it's like there was a lot of that cost and the weariness of seeing all the horror. And then I saw the really big picture of the world, of history, of church history, and how and why we win in the end.
Wow. Boy, that's it. And thank God that we are going to win in the end. Cindy and I, my wife and I, were reading this morning in Revelation and reading even about the blood of those that were slain in the Great Tribulation and how that in the end, they are going to cry out to the Lord. And it is amazing to realize that this is a theme from the beginning, from the beginning.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's there. It's not going away. So it's not like, you know, you use the word niche or a little earlier, or some people would pronounce it a niche. It's not like you're dealing with something that's kind of like, this is like a one-off and it's kind of rare. And what we do in this ministry is kind of remote and maybe not. No, this is the heart and soul of how the gospel has grown from the beginning. Is the fact that the enemy would love to persecute believers and non-believers would love to persecute believers. And we're seeing it. And we're seeing it happen more regularly in our country. And that's got to be a concern for you as well.
It is. Yeah, that's like a whole nother conversation. Just the people I talk to in England, Canada, the U.S., and what's going on. But if there's a word of encouragement for anybody out there, you know, I think you already said it. And I would just say, there's nothing new under the sun. Anything we're going through, it's not new. And in the end, the Lord uses Satan's schemes and turns it back on him to defeat him. And we don't want persecution. You kind of said that earlier. We absolutely do not. We've been given such a gift from the founders of the freedom that we have. And we have to defend it vigorously for everybody, not just for Christians. It's a gift that protects us from each other. But nothing will stop his church. We will go through valley and peak, but nothing will stop his church in the end.
Yeah.
And because it's not us. Because who are we? We don't have much. It's just he gathers us, and the key is for him to be working through us.
I think most of us would know about the persecuted church in China. What other areas of the world are you seeing this ramp up where believers are being persecuted?
Yeah, I mean, the country I always point to is Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in any given year, you can always point to North Korea as the worst. And, you know, you wouldn't get a big argument from me. But Nigeria, I got to tell you, it's such a sleeper for most people. You know, in the last 20 years, they've probably, the Islamists have probably murdered 100,000 Christians.
Yeah.
No one really knows the number because it's out in the field. But it's a massive, massive land grab, massive, slow-moving jihad genocide. And every year, you know, the Nigerian government comes to Washington and says, gosh, this is such a tough problem. We can't find these guys, and they're so hard to find. They're out in the bush. You know, and the equivalent would be if the government in our own country, if we had seen 500,000 Christians murdered, and the government was saying, we can't find these guys. Well, it doesn't fly. It doesn't fly anywhere.
Right.
But somehow people in the State Department scratch their head and say, well, and the guys in Nigeria say, why don't you give us more money for arms and helicopters and maybe we can find them then.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, so the fix is in.
Yeah.
Islamists are within. They're running the deep state. They're running intel. They're running the army. They're running intelligence. And so they're aiding and abetting.
Wow.
And it's a massive, massive, slow-moving genocide of Christians.
Well, we pray for those in Nigeria and China and all the countries. It's an ongoing concern. You've given us today, Jeff, a perspective that I think is so healthy for us all. And I thank you for it. The book that Jeff has written, it's called The Whisper. And you can find that again on Amazon. And again, the website for Jeff's organization is persecution.org, the International Christian Concern. Jeff King, thanks for being with me today.
Mike, always great to be with you.
All right, and we'll be back in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike.
Join host Mike Gilland for The Shepherd at Work every Saturday morning at 10:05 a.m. You will be introduced to a marketplace leader that will help you learn to walk out your faith wherever you live and work. The Shepherd at Work is sponsored by the Central Florida Christian Chamber, building kingdom, business, and community throughout our area. That's The Shepherd at Work, this Saturday morning at 10:05 a.m.
All right, on the line with me right now, I've got Troy Miller from the NRB. He is the president of the NRB and a man that I've grown to respect. I had him on the program a couple of years back when we were booth mates at the Business Expo for the chamber that is here in Orlando. And it's great to have you on the line, Troy. Welcome back.
Oh, Mike, thanks for having me again. It's good to be with you.
It is so good to talk with you. And again, when I say a man I respect, I really do. And I know that you would have felt the love of just literally those thousands of people in the room at the NRB this year. It was quite a moving time from every aspect, and I so respect the stand that the national religious broadcasters have taken, especially on something that's been in the news, and it continues to be so, and that is our American viewpoints and policies that pertain to protecting life at the most vulnerable level. And I know that you and your family, your wife and yourself, are involved in the pro-life movement. Thank you for that. And you've made a big statement recently on behalf. So why don't you go ahead and share from your heart the essence of this statement that you've made?
Well, thank you, Mike. And first of all, you're exactly right. We are unapologetically pro-life from the moment of conception until natural death. And you know, and that is the dignity that God has given us as human beings being made in his image. And this is the biblical response that God put on our hearts, and not a response that comes from man. Too much about what goes on today in the pro-life movement is worried about what humans think, what we think about life. And look, God has already defined that from us. We know all, and hopefully all, of the viewers are familiar with the various verses throughout the Bible that God, we were knitted together in the womb. God knew us before we were in the hidden places.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we're it just as a society, I think one of the things that I've talked about a lot and I'm very concerned about is this, the fact that we don't hold this high regard and high dignity for life and for humanity. Not only is this an issue in the pro-life movement as it relates to life at conception and that a child, that's not anything else. Forget all the scientific terms that are out there. That's a human life that is flourishing within the mother. Not only does that pertain to the womb, but our view there reverberates across the rest of culture when we hold this low regard to life and devalue life. I think so many of the problems we are having in crime and schools and shootings and various things all relate back to this whole low view that culture tends to hold of human life. And that's a sad indictment on the culture today. But I'm so happy that so many Christian organizations, especially NRB members who have been in this fight for a long time or continuing this fight, are not wavering in the fact that life is precious. It's a gift from God. We are created by God, and we have value because we're created in His image.
What I love about what you're doing and what you're saying is so needed in our culture that so often it's happened where Christians are kind of like sitting on the wayside and not taking the offensive. But the NRB is stepping up to the plate and putting these kinds of thoughts out there and forcefully so in a good way, in a really good way, to put out there what the Bible says. And I agree with you completely. It's not what you or I think about this matter. It's what God thinks. And He has been very clear in His word about what He says about life and what He feels about those who would danger a life of a little one. Suffer the little ones to come unto Me. And you think about that picture. So thank you for that stand. Yeah. I wish more companies and even churches would step up to the plate and speak out on this.
Well, I agree. I wish more in churches. We certainly need more pulpits to speak out on this and reach their congregations. The pastors have the biggest influence on the people that are sitting in the chairs and the pews within the walls of the churches that they're, you know, called to shepherd. And the life issue needs to be first foremost predominant. I think with, you know, some of the statements that have been made recently by political officials, it just calls for the church to be clear on this issue, to not waver, to not give any ground. I know we like to see incremental victories, but that doesn't mean we're giving ground on our core beliefs and the fundamental beliefs we hold that life is a gift from God. I mean, look, the gospel message is about Jesus Christ, the Son of God, coming down from heaven to incarnate to be born, into humanity and to die for humanity's sake. And so from what God tells us all about our lives to the fact of what He did for us for humanity, ought to call us as Christians to hold life at the very pinnacle, at the very top of one of our core beliefs and core morality should be that life is precious.
Yeah. And, you know, we see in culture just the opposite, where what is being exalted to the point of really not even, it's not even real with the statements they're making about abortion being in the context of women's health. That's not true. It's really not true. And at the best, what it's saying is that what we're going to exalt is my view that I can do anything I want to do in my life at all, regardless of any other consideration. And that's just not true. And that's not true for anything. You can't take a volleyball game and remove the rules and think that it's going to go well. I mean, it just doesn't. And this is ludicrous what's going on today.
Oh, well said, Mike. Well said. It is ludicrous. So much of the me movement has gone across culture that it's all about me. And this is not a women's health issue. This is not about the health of women. Everybody who holds to, you know, Christian beliefs, and anybody who actually understands the history of Christianity, we understand that the healthcare system that we have today, and the reason we have nurses and hospitals, you take Christianity out of the equation, and you don't get those things at the scale we have them today. They were founded by Christians for the purpose, because they go back to this idea that life is precious.
Mm-hmm.
But today everything is about convenience. You know, the abortion argument isn't about the health of women. It's about convenience of women. And somehow, because God created women as the ones who would carry life and life would grow within them, somehow women have erased all of that and say, that's not life within me. That's just part of my body. But even science can't deny that that is a separate human being from the point of conception that's growing inside of somebody. And I want to expand on this issue, as you said. It really does permeate across culture. So our devalue of life in the womb, life at creation, and look at countries who've really taken this to the extreme. You know, Canada, just to the north of us, now we have life devalued at the end of life. So if you're, you know, creating an inconvenience in society, or somehow you're dealing with depression, or they recently allowed, I believe it was a 20-something-year-old person to commit, you know, assisted suicide, euthanasia, simply because they were dealing with depression. So, you know, that's where this all goes. And you take it throughout the entertainment industry and just look at the culture today and action movies and movies across, you know, the body count just piles up as if life has no meaning. I'm a veteran, and I can tell you that if you go out and talk to any veterans who've actually been in combat, been in a war zone, also my family has a lot of police in it, or talk to mm-hmm. any policemen who've actually had to fire their weapon, they will tell you that taking a life has a profound impact on them. And many of them carry that for the rest of their lives, or to lose loved ones. But yet in culture, in entertainment today, we just devalue like that's no big deal. You know, that the body count just piled up, and we don't realize that somebody just lost a father or a brother or a son or a husband, you know, or a wife. You know, we just act like it's nonchalant. And that's all because we don't value life at its first point, that point of conception, and it ripples through society. And look, America can't do this and get away with it without God's hand of judgment coming upon it.
I think that is well said. We need to all take that into consideration. But this consideration, or lack thereof, that is happening in our country right now, here's the thing that I know must drive you crazy, is the way that the media, which we're all a part. You're a part. You're leading one of the biggest Christian organizations for media in the world. And yet those that are in secular media right now have bought so far into this that you have a hard time being on any of those outlets and looking like you're anything less than a crazed radical. And that's just got to really bother you in your position.
Well, yeah, you know, the left has done the secular media has, you know, as you said, they have silenced, first of all, the pro-life voice the best they can. They would never have, you know, key articulate pro-lifers on. They always try to get somebody on who they can pigeonhole into, as you said, looking like a, you know, some sort of crazy religious fanatic or radical.
Right, right.
Yet all the polls across the country, if you look at the polls, most people across the country hold a view of a very limited abortion structure across the country, if not just banning it outright once they actually understand what abortion is all about. That's the other thing the left has done well, is to hide from the populace what abortion really is about. And we're a long ways from where we were, let's say, back in the 1980s or 1990s, when the left was all about, you know, safe, legal, and rare. All we don't hear about safe and legal rare anymore. All we hear about is legal, and legal up to the point of right before birth, or even as some crazy California congressman, state senator, state congressman suggested, that maybe even after birth, we ought to have a period where a child could be euthanized because of the parent's inconvenience.
Wow.
or for whatever.
Oh, my.
And that's where we've lost today. And the left, people don't really stop and think for a second how extreme the left is now. There is no more safe, legal, and rare. It's just legal right up to and maybe even beyond the point of birth. And
yeah.
And yet we're the radicals. That's just so wrong.
It is wrong. And that's what's put out there on all these outlets on a regular basis, day in and day out. And we're just praying here in Florida that the people of Florida will catch on to not only this aim that the left has, but the deceptive devices and language that they're using on this Amendment 4 in Florida that is going to be on the ballot. And we saw what happened in Ohio. And I'm sure that there are a lot of broadcasters in Ohio that are just sad and sick over what happened in that special off-year election. But this year now, it's going to be during a presidential election. A lot is at stake. So thank you for speaking up the way you do for so many of us. I know our organization, Mark Media, we're happy to be part of the NRB, and you guys are doing a phenomenal job, not only for broadcasters, but for the entire country. And Troy, I'd just like to say thank you.
Well, thank you, Mike. And I'm encouraged that broadcasters like you and other broadcasters across this country are not afraid to speak up and to take this message out to their audiences. And I would just encourage any of your listeners to encourage your pastors to talk about this, especially you across Florida who are going to be dealing with this bill that comes up on the ballot in November. And it's so important for us as Christians to speak up into the culture, because we have the truth and we're truth and light. So folks, be that in the culture. And Mike, again, thank you for having me on your show.
It is so great, Troy. Can't wait till the next time. And God bless you. And friends, thanks for listening today to Afternoons with Mike. We'll catch you the next time.